You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson and this is the Food Talk Show. An hour of, well, discussing and quite often tasting. I don't know if we've got anything to taste today, actually, Guy.
I don't know what's going on. We've dropped the ball.
And we have, actually. We talk about innovative food and drink products, food tech, food trends. Well, just about anything to do with the food and drink sector, really. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, the lovely Guy Routledge, co-founder of The Food Rush. You've got a big smile on your face because you've just been eating and you're never happier than when you've just had a lot.
I know, it's a wonderfully serendipitous thing, me being on a food-related show.
Yes, you absolutely love it. So we are joined today by Helen Roberts, who's from Wandsworth Foodies, and we're going to be talking all about Wandsworth Foodies and all the other foodie things that she's doing. Helen is also a bit of a coach and business guru, so I thought I might get some top tips.
Yeah, I'm just here to hoover up the business advice,
really. Yeah, exactly.
Some free consulting for the afternoon.
She normally charges £2,000 an hour, but we're going to get it. We're going to get it for.
Well, then I think today we have an extra long show, approximately just over an hour long.
We're also joined by Mitt Sharma from My Allergy. And again, Mitt actually has got a little bit of a businessy background. So I think we might have a little sort of catch up on all things business as well as his new venture. And as we know, allergies, well, they're all the rage, but you can't really say that about
allergies. Well, you can't really say it's all the rage, but you can't really even say that they're kind of trending. But they certainly seem to be growing in, again, popularity. We're using all the wrong words.
We're using all the wrong words.
I think
that people are much more aware about what they are allergic to and what they're not allergic to and are actively looking to try and manage
Absolutely.
Those products out. And therefore, there's a big market for it, which there never used to be.
Certainly.
So let's start off with Helen Roberts. Helen, welcome to the show.
Sue, thank you very much for having me.
That's okay. So Wandsworth Foodies is a subscription platform that is designed to help people in the food industry. Before we talk about that, can I just talk about Wandsworth? Because I was born there. Has it got a blue plaque anyway? Have you noticed? Sue Nelson was born here.
I won't say what year it was. I'll be sure to look out for it.
It's in the mail, Sue.
Yeah, I went to school there as well and everything. A little bit of information about Wandsworth. It's 13 square miles because it's a borough all of its own now. When I was born there, it wasn't.
What was it when you were back in the day?
It was a sort of mixture of Wandsworth and Battersea.
Okay.
It was a whole thing. Now it's just Wandsworth on its own, and it's 13 square miles. It's in southwest London, if anybody wants to know. And it's got 300,000 residents now.
Wow, that's a lot. So,
yeah.
I also live in Wandsworth.
I live in Wandsworth.
I live in Tooting, yeah.
You live in a posh bit, knowing you.
No, it's a really crappy bit on the fringe of the nice bit. I'm just kind of hoping that the fringe pushes out slowly.
And the house prices start to go up.
Well, yeah. I've kind of got my fingers crossed for the Crossrail.
Yes.
Doubled my money overnight, thank you.
Aside from that, obviously, the real sort of landmarks in Wandsworth are the Clapham Junction railway station. There used to be this guy, I don't know if he's still there, but if you used to go on that railway line and then go through Clapham Junction, he regularly used to flash in the morning to all the commuters. But I don't know if he's still there.
Well, I can say that I've never seen him.
Have you not?
We're missing out.
No, everybody just used to go, oh, there he is again.
I made an app about Clapham Junction. It was one of the first apps that I made.
Junction flasher.
No, it's called whichplatform.co.uk. You can go there and you can find, you know, the platform that you need from all those millions of options that you've got there.
What a useful app that was. Did you make your fortune with that?
It's still probably the most popular thing I've ever done.
Oh, is it?
No.
Really? There's also New Covent Garden there in the vicinity and London Heliport. So it's an interesting borough. And of course, huge diversity of people who live there. Mm. Huge diversity of religions and cultures, which makes it the vibrant place it is.
And also a great hub for foodie stuff because of all those different cultures.
Well, when I used to live there in the early 60s, I know, that's a terrible
fact of the podcast.
Yeah, fact of the podcast. As opposed to last week, you found out the fact of this week.
That was still better.
Yeah,
than this
so brought up in the 60s in Wandsworth, and it was obviously the time of the Beatles and, you know, all that sort of thing. It's changed hugely, hasn't it? In 50 years, in half a century, and now it's actually a mecca for foodies. I mean, it wasn't then; it was awful in terms
Absolutely.
Of food.
I think as food goes, I mean, it's the food destination really for people to go to. And I think that's part of the reason why we set up food Wandsworth Foodies. It has everything. I mean, it has phenomenal. It has like Michelin star restaurants. It has, you know, street food. It has up and coming restaurants as well. You name it, they have it. And it's continuing to grow. So it's, you know, designed to bring more people into Wandsworth and also to encourage people that are in Wandsworth to actually buy locally and eat locally and drink locally.
So where are there all these good places in Wandsworth then? Well, Wandsworth Road? No.
Well, you've got lots in Clapham, Clapham Junction. You've got a number in Battersea. You've got a number in Tooting as well. We've got, you know, a number of them kind of springing up everywhere. And, you know, in terms of cafes as well, there's a big cafe culture. Lots of small independents, lots of independents that are growing as well. A number of the businesses that we work with actually only want to grow their businesses inside Wandsworth.
Right.
So, you know, a couple of them have five or six cafes purely in Wandsworth because, you know, that's where they see the growth and that's where the demand.
I have to say, when we moved to Tooting about just over a year ago, and I was kind of dreading it. It was a strategic move.
What do you mean dreading it?
So I do this stupid thing where we move to a place that is a wreck. We do it up nice, sell it on, and move to somewhere else. And I knew it was a good strategic move, but I just wasn't really into the area. I just thought, oh, it just looks a bit rough around the edges. There's nothing here for me. Moan, as I like to do. And then we moved in and we discovered that there is all this amazing stuff, just like a 10-minute walk away. So there's a fantastic local pub. There's the Broadway Market, which used to be full of lots of, I don't know how best to describe it, lots of like fabric shops and seamstresses and stuff like that. And now there's just loads of amazing
good place to buy lace.
Good place to buy lace, maybe. Yeah. But now there's like craft beer place. There's a little wine shop called Unwind in Tooting, which is just amazing. There's a gin distillery and a gin bar there. There's craft pizza. There's loads of fantastic stuff. And I'd love to go there over a weekend. It's fantastic.
Well, there you go. So Wandsworth Foodies. Wandsworth is the place to be as far as food is concerned, as far as you're concerned, for sure. And what exactly is this is Wandsworth Foodies site?
So Wandsworth Foodies is a platform to bring more food businesses to being. So we were charged with setting up Wandsworth Foodies to bring more people into Wandsworth to eat and drink in the borough, but also to help businesses, people that have this burning idea that they want to set up a business. They've got this fantastic idea, but they don't know how to actually start it up. So we were charged with helping people to start up their business in food and also to work with the small businesses, small to medium-sized businesses in food and help them to put the infrastructure in place to grow them. So a platform to get these food businesses together, get them to work together, to work with us either through workshops that we're providing, specialist workshops to help them, to give them some tools to help them to grow their business, or to actually work with them on a one-on-one basis to craft a strategy for their business to grow. And so we've done that. We've engaged with over 600 businesses in that time. Oh, we've worked with that number, and we've seen an incredible amount of businesses that just were so thankful for the support that they got, because business is a lonely world and can be. And, you know, to have a shop or to have a restaurant or a cafe right now, business rates increasing, rents increasing, they're looking at ways that they can continue to drive the growth of their business.
Yes.
So
it's quite
very
tough,
thankful for
isn't it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mitch, I know you've got a business background before we come on talk, you know, about what you're doing. It doesn't matter whether you're in food or a circus or a taxi driver. I don't know why I said circus. It came into my head. It's still a business, isn't it? And you've still got to have the same business principles.
You've got to have the same business principles. But what I also find is a USP really helps. So what makes you different? And trying to put yourself in the shoes of your customer, why would they come to you as opposed to another restaurant that they've always been going to, that they know gives food that they're going to be okay with? So it's just trying to get people through the door as well. The services you provide, or the quality of the food, or the variation of the foods as well. Location of where the restaurant is, all of these things you've got to think about. Do your market research. What kind of local people are there? What's your typical persona of someone that might be coming to this restaurant? And then marketing accordingly. And then what avenues of marketing can you use? Is it YouTube, or is it Instagram or Pinterest and all of these other things? So I think gone are the days where you can just put something up in a newspaper or a local advert saying, hey, we've just opened up a new restaurant.
And it will be fine.
Exactly. Mm. It's now a case of, right, what other avenues are there out there that you can use? Because everyone now is on their mobile phone.
Sure.
And it's just making sure even your restaurant has a web presence, updating that, having blogs. So...
It's all basic stuff, but it's important for everybody.
Exactly, yeah.
In a way, it's a lot easier now because of all the technology, but also it's much harder because there's so much noise and so many people to go through.
I think in some respects it's harder, I have to say.
Absolutely, it's harder.
I've worked in advertising agencies most of my life, and your choice was, at the time, two television channels for advertising, that was it. And pirate radio, with Jimmy Savile off the beach and wherever he was then, was it Jimmy Savile, one of them, Tony Blackman, I think, and there wasn't actually that many choices, and it was all about money, you didn't have the competition.
Sure, money still makes it work these days.
You try and cut through all that stuff now. Being heard and seen is actually quite difficult.
I think
what you're doing, Helen, is instead of it being this huge global thing now where you're competing with everybody, you're trying to build a community where you have that hands-on help so that people can get that personal advice.
Yeah.
Because there's just so many choices.
Absolutely.
How do you know what to do if you've never run a business before?
And absolutely. And actually, like you said just now, that a lot of these businesses, they've never really thought about what makes them special, what makes them unique, what have they got that differentiates them from their competitor. They've never really kind of worked in the digital field where they've had to promote themselves, online in that space. And I think as well, we're in a different world where, people just want, they want to try different things. The customer experience is it's key. And if they don't get a good customer service today, it's online immediately, and the reviews are there, and they're there for a long period of time. So it's helping business owners to really, to think about their business, where it's at, and also, more importantly, where it's going. What we've found is lots of people get started in business and they then get on this treadmill and it's not really going anywhere fast.
It's still hugely hard work.
Yeah.
They
become a slave to the business, Sue.
Yeah.
And they get stuck on the treadmill and they don't really know what to do. So what we do is we help them to get off that treadmill, to think about where their business is right now, but also think about where it's going and what the plan is, to get there, and help them with those kind of milestones to help them to appreciate that and get there.
So when you're in big business, you work for PLC or something like that, you're used to doing your marketing strategy or your corporate strategy, which is a document, 500 pages long, and who's doing what, and then there's appendices and budgets. And you're not talking about that, are you? You're talking about having a very simple plan.
Absolutely.
But it's, on a few sheets of paper, and it really helps you visualise and set out where you're trying to go. Is that the sort of thing?
Absolutely.
That you would do?
We have a one-page business plan, if you like. It's a business model. And in that, it actually has the model for the business in terms of where it's going and how it's going to grow and the key core areas that it needs to focus on in the business, sales, marketing, finance, HR, operations, new product development and innovation. And it really helps them to kind of get centered about what they need to work on, the critical drivers of the business, the things that they need to work on to help it to grow, rather than doing the things that they like doing and it doesn't really go anywhere. So we'll help them to do that.
But as Mitt said, lots of people do it and don't think about the competition, though.
Yeah.
They don't actually put their business in context and think about, I'm going to sell bread. There's four people selling bread up your road.
Yeah.
As Mitt said again, USP, what is your unique selling point that's going to make you stand out from those? Is that the sort of thing that you'll help people with?
Absolutely.
It's got to be seen in context.
Absolutely. So helping them to identify what their USPs are, but also more importantly, communicating them. A lot of them actually have USPs, but they haven't actually uncovered them.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, they don't know how to communicate them to customers in a way that they're going to get it and want to come to that particular cafe, for instance.
So can I give you an example then? So I'm going to put you right on the spot now, Helen. Okay, so I've turned up. I just make incredible coffee. I'm brilliant at it, and I make these let's say they're gluten free, whatever,
dairy free
cakes. and everybody tells me that they're fabulous. I've got a little bit of money, so I can find some premises, and I come to you and I go, right, I want to set up in Wandsworth. What would you do for me? How would you what sort of questions would you ask, and how could you help me put that together?
Yeah, well, the first thing that we do is to understand just exactly what the business is. So in terms of coffee, well, what is it? You know, what kind of coffee is it? What makes it special? What makes it unique? What have you got that somebody else hasn't got? You know, how big is that market already? What kind of location are you looking at? How are you looking at reaching into to that particular market? And who are your competitors? You know, what have they done? You know, what kind of room is there in that market for somebody, you know, like you?
And you look at price.
Is it fair trade? Is it organic? Like is it, you know, what kind of price point are you going to have? You know, what are your setup costs? Really to help, what we would help them to do is to actually model the business in terms of all the costs associated with all of the kind of sales and the marketing kind of piece around it. You know, what is it that makes it special and unique? And is there room for it? Is it a viable business? And actually help you with a step-by-step plan in terms of to make that happen. Look at, okay, if you have it and then you've got special cakes as well. Again, the same thing. What makes it special? What makes it unique? Mm. And who could you potentially, are you looking at opening your own shop or cafe? It's quite costly. So again, looking at your revenues and what you have available there. Two, could you potentially joint venture with somebody that could help you to, you know, move that forward? We have a little business that got in touch with us. They make homemade cakes and they've got a whole variety of cakes that they do, gluten-free, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't have the money to set up their own cafe, but what we helped them to do was to look at the market and actually reach into some of the existing cafes that they're already that don't have access to these cakes. So they're selling now into those cafes until they build a business.
A business to business, as opposed to business to consumer, which is perfectly acceptable.
Absolutely. So business to business and the online portal and platform as well. So it's easier for them to be able to manage. And then we just have to make sure that they can distribute those cakes.
And how often are people coming to you and they haven't really worked out the financials? You know, they've got some money to maybe fit a shop out or to start with their first batch of products, but they haven't really worked out how much profit properly that they're making when they take their overheads into account and all that sort of stuff and paying themselves. Is that quite usual, or are people fairly financially savvy?
Absolutely not. I find that people that are probably thinking
the
about
majority of them
absolutely the majority of people they really are not sure what finances they need. Some of them have access to finances, but they don't really know kind of what they need around that. Some people don't have access to funding, so we help them to strategize and to look at ways in which they can actually access finance, whether that's through angels, investors or VCs, depending on the level of business that they're at. But even, it's interesting, people that are in business that are looking to grow, that need access to funding as well, sometimes they don't really know what they need either. Mm. So we help them to scope that out. What do they need? What do they need it for?
Are people shocked? I mean, because if you were to say, right, I need to make £20,000 a year to live on, say, which isn't a lot, let's face it, and you would say to them, well, do you realise that you've got to turn over at least £100,000 or £150,000? Do people, and then they work out how many cakes that is.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do people realise?
But trying to predict that stuff is really difficult, especially if you're doing it for the first time. You're like, I don't really know how much I'm going to be able to charge for this product. I don't really know what the cost of all the ingredients are. Yeah. I don't really know what my margin's going to be. I don't know how I'm going to pay my staff. And there's just so many unknowns. It must be a real minefield to help navigate these people through.
Absolutely. And actually, just, you know, you mentioning those core details, so that's what we help them to do as well, is to actually break down and have a look at the costs, have a look at the margins that they can make, do the research, what are other people getting out there, actually go and talk to potential businesses that they would work with and find out what kind of revenue they can create from a cake sale, if you like, to find out the margin. So no, absolutely, I think it's one of the biggest challenges that businesses face today, is you know, when you're starting up, getting access, you know, the access to funding, and then when you're in business, understanding, you know, the funding that you need to actually to drive the growth of that business.
Yeah, I find that those are the two biggest things in startup world that I came across, was definitely product market fit and determining that. So things like the USP, where people actually like this, how we market it, and cash flow, because they always say cash flow will kill you, and it's always those two things.
See, cash flow is a difficult thing to understand in many respects.
It's very complex, isn't it?
Well, it is, really. So people will say, well, you know, cash flow is easy because it's how much you've got in the bank. Yeah, well, that's a good measure. Mm. But cash flow is about how much you're going to have a bank in a month's time and 2 months' time and 3 months' time, which is much, much more difficult to understand. And I think the problem is, when you're growing as a business, is that you start taking on more cost. So you think, oh God, we're so busy. Right, I need another person. Mm. But actually, your outgoings are increasing that month, but you still haven't got that money in yet. Mm-hmm. So on the face of it, you've got orders and things are going really, really well. But actually, all you're doing at that point in time is adding more cost to your business.
Yep.
And for me, cash flow is that lag between adding more cost and you're doing really well, but actually the money coming in. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that crucifies people so often.
It does.
And I presume, Helen, that's the sort of thing where you can help people to plan in advance and get them to try and manage out those risks as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And agree parameters up front in terms of payment terms as much as possible as well. But also, there are a range of ways that people now can get paid on their invoice as soon as they invoice it. Mm. So we help them with that too, to make sure that they always have enough cash to continue the running of their business.
Can I have a rant about getting paid? Drives me nuts. I mean, I think business consumers, not so bad, because you're getting people that are paying cash or, you know, paying by card immediately. When it's business to business, it's much more difficult because people don't pay there and then. And if you have that as your payment terms, I'm sure you'll agree with me, Mitt. If you start your business and go, I'm sorry, mate, we only do cash on delivery, you'll never get an order, will you? Because people don't work like that.
Yeah, and some bigs, not naming anyone, but there are some very big grocery stores, and they have like 100-day payment terms for their invoices.
It's unbelievable.
And if you're a small supplier and you've just, and it's not like they're going to order a small amount, you've got a huge cost for producing all of these goods and then delivering it all.
And if we put that in context, these are people who are making millions and millions and millions and millions of pounds a year. These aren't people who have got a model like Amazon where they never make any money. Mm. You know, these are people who make serious amounts of money every year.
Exactly.
And I hear lots of stories about big business where they'll say, you know, we used to have a 90-day arrangement. Mm. Actually, we've just written to all our suppliers. We're moving it to 120 days.
It's crazy.
What an absolute disgrace.
Absolutely.
So, and you're okay then that somebody spends all that money, which might take them months to do the product, then they deliver it, and then you're still going to take 4 months to pay.
To pay, exactly. And
disgraceful.
And they're already on such a thin margin. It's crazy because the big stores have negotiated it down so much. So they're already on a thin margin. And this is, again, where trying to do some really good financial planning and not maybe relying so much on one customer might help. But it's really tough. It is really difficult because even the shelves, each shelf space, they kind of like allocate a cost towards it. So everyone's fighting to get their products in there. And because there's almost like a monopoly on getting these foods into these stores, it's getting more and more difficult for suppliers. Mm. So this is probably where more platforms are becoming available, and they're seeing a bit of traction in that sense. But
they need to be more corporately responsible.
I totally agree.
So again, returning to you, Helen, are you giving advice to people who are literally starting off, as you were describing? Are you giving advice to people, as we've just described, trying to get listings or trying to get traction higher up as well?
Absolutely. Through this program, we've actually worked with pretty much everybody, pre-start people that are literally thinking about a business and helping them to iron out that and get that, nailing that down. People that have just started and help them to get the infrastructure in place. But also businesses that already have one or two cafes that want to grow to 5 or 6 or 10. People that are turning over 5 or 6 million that want to go to 10 million or want to go from 10 million to 15 million and so on and so forth. So we've had a whole range of people, connect in. And it's actually been really interesting. It's a council-backed initiative. And so many of these companies have been so overwhelmed with the value that they've been able to get from this. And many of them have said that actually, prior to this support being offered by the council, they didn't realise how important it was to have a mentor, you know, to get out of their business, to actually focus on it in terms of to help it to grow. And already, you know, in the last year that we're working on this programme, we've seen tremendous amounts of success within these businesses that have created, you know, 30, 40, 50% growth in that time.
But surely this is good for the council in terms of, you know, that means that people are renting and space and they're creating jobs. And it's a very forward thinking thing from the council's point of view.
I mean, I have to say, once with the council on the economic development team, they are super pro-business. And I think food businesses in the borough is such a big employer as well. Mm-hmm. It's the heart of the borough. You know, people are going out to eat, people are buying their groceries. It's fundamentally impacting every household, you know, in the borough. So, I mean, it's been fantastic. And bearing in mind, if you think about rent rates going up, you know, rates going up as well, it's just a way that I think that the council can give back if the businesses are more successful. You know,
but it's generating income for them anyway. Exactly.
And they're employing more people. And in the food sector, it actually employs, I think, the second largest amount of people in the UK today. So it's a massive, massive sector.
Brilliant. Amazing. And so this initiative, as you called it, is council backed. Mm-hmm. So that means that the service you're actually providing to these people comes at a very low cost, to the point that it's actually free.
Correct. It's free for the businesses engaging in the campaign. It's funded by the council.
Which is fantastic, because I'm sure lots of people were listening to the first few minutes of this show thinking, oh yeah, that sounds brilliant, but oh, I bet it's really expensive. If you happen to be a Wandsworth resident and happen to be in the food space, then you can go and chat to Helen and get some free advice to help you grow the business.
Absolutely. So a Wandsworth resident or a business in Wandsworth or somebody that wants to trade in Wandsworth can get in touch with us to get some free advice.
You'll be hearing from me very shortly.
Fantastic.
Don't back him, Helen, whatever you're doing.
Thank you, Sue.
I'm sure there's some strict criteria. Only joking, Guy.
Yes.
Can we just do a little bit about your background, and then we're going to have a little break and talk a lot more to Mitt. But you've actually started off in business, not necessarily in food.
Yeah.
But you've been involved in quite a lot of businesses and quite a lot of consulting.
Correct. Yes. And started my first business about 19 years ago now. The grey hairs and the wrinkles to prove it. And at the time when I started my first business, there wasn't the kind of support that there is available today. And I kind of learned the hard way, worked hard, slaved to the business, grew it quite quickly and had fantastic success. But I know it could have been even better by having, reached out to a mentor. So 3 years into my journey, I thought, okay, now I need, quick story, I turned over $1 million in my first year with one assistant, and I hired 3 or 4 more people for the second year, and I turned over $1 million again. And the third year, I thought, right, I'm going to increase my hires to 10 so that I could turn over more. But guess what? I turned over the same amount of money because I was doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And so, I see the power of getting out of your business to working with a business expert, business mentor that can help you to drive the growth of your business. So since then, I've set up multiple businesses and have gone on to grow those and sold those. And since then, I've coached, mentored, trained and supported thousands of other businesses to date in every imaginable industry, people from all walks of life, and help people to create, the life that they want through building their business, giving them that freedom to grow their business around something that they love.
Yeah, see, I run this thing called Breakthrough Women, which is it's a charitable thing, really. We try and get people on the mid-career ladder just to understand, a few more things about business. And one of the things I always say at those groups is, don't really go and get training or coaching or whatever, unless it's something technical that you need, something that you very specifically have to learn. Go and get a mentor. Whatever you do, go and get a mentor, because that person can listen to you. It's lonely running your own business. And that person can take your very particular circumstances, which are always individual, aren't they, and unique, and really help you, and can be quite tough as well if they need to be, help you and be on your side.
I think that's the thing, Sue. At the end of the day, when you're in business, you're on your own, you're accountable to yourself. And I actually think sometimes you need some accountability somewhere else. Mm. And I find that in many businesses, with many business owners that I have, the single most important feedback that I get from them is that we're the catalyst. We keep them, catalysts to help them to move things forward, and we keep them accountable. We keep them honest. We make sure that they work on the things that they need to work on, the critical drivers of the business to grow it, rather than the things that they like to potentially work on and not the other stuff.
Well, sometimes when you're in it, you can't,
get lost.
Yeah, you get a little bit lost, and you forget what's around you, and you don't concentrate on why you're there in the first place.
Exactly. Mm. Absolutely.
So are you a little bit Simon Cowell?
No,
because actually sometimes the best advice you can give to somebody is don't go into business with this because it's not going to work. Do you have to say that sometimes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because ultimately I always work in business, and I think that, if I'm honest, based on the knowledge and skills and experience that I've gained over the years, if I, can look at something I genuinely think is not going to work and I can back it up in terms of reasons why, I'd hate people to... I've seen people mortgage their house, remortgage their house
to
crazy raise money on from friends and family, and they put it into something and they spent a fortune on it and it's just going nowhere. So I prefer to be cruel, to be kind, be honest as I see it at the time. And if there's any way that I can help them to maybe do something else around that particular product or service, then we could tweak it and change it. But I'd hate to see them waste their money.
Yeah, and I hear a lot of people saying, you've got to be passionate. You've got to be passionate in the food industry. No, you haven't. You've got to be passionate to make it work, but you mustn't fall so in love with it that you can't see it when it's not going to happen. Mm.
And it's interesting. I think it's very important
to
love kind of doing what you do, to love the kind of game of business.
Yeah.
And yes, you can fall in love with a product or service, but you may not have the business expertise to take it to where it needs to go. So you can have a great product or service, but if nobody knows about it, it's actually not a good business. So I think, yes, you need to love it because that's going to give you the impetus to keep going and perseverance, because we know in business there's going to be bumps in the roads. There always is. It's going to be tough. It's like it's a marathon sport, I say to people. You know, it takes that time, that dedication and that commitment to actually achieve the success in it that you need, that you want.
Yeah, and it's tough. Make no bones about it. It doesn't matter what you're
in. Just because you're passionate about this thing isn't going to make it easy, but it certainly helps to get you through the pain.
And I always say to people as well, it's tough. And some people don't have the stomach for it. You know, you just don't have the stomach for it. And so I actually try my best at the beginning to make sure that people realize what this is, because some people think it's an easy route. It's an easy journey. But actually, it's, you know, harder than any day job that you could do out there, because you're doing everything and you're worrying about paying your staff. You're worrying about getting paid. You're worrying about, you know, getting new customers and them staying with you. And it's a difficult, difficult task.
Well, I think you're just putting everybody off there. we're just going to have a little break and then we're going to return with Helen Roberts and Mitt Sharma. I nearly forgot your surname, didn't I? in between times, we're going to be talking to Davina Steele, who runs Manna Vida, make great gluten-free bread kits. I've had one myself, the focaccia, rosemary focaccia
that does sound
bread.
Good.
Ooh, it's lovely. So we're just going to have a quick chat with Davina and then we're going to come back to Helen and Mitt.
So I'm still here at the IFE exhibition at London Excel. So many fantastic companies exhibiting at the show, and one of them that I've come across is Manna Vida. And I'm here with Davina, who is the founder and CEO, director, a bit of everything. And so could you tell me a little bit about Manna Vida?
Yes, of course. It was set up a few years ago, about 2 years ago, in fact, after I'd had cancer treatment, and I became intolerant to, well, pretty much everything in the world, really. And this was really bad for me because I'm a great big foodie, as is my husband. And I was moaning and moaning to him that I couldn't eat bread anymore. Beautiful bread with cheese and a glass of wine, you know the stuff. And he just reminded me, he said, well, you're a scientist, you're a nutritionist. You spend 90% of your life through choice in the kitchen. Sort it out. Okay. So I did my research and checked the structure of gluten and the structure of wheat and how much of all the different constituents, protein, carbs and whatever in there. Made an awful lot of really, really bad bread. Even the birds wouldn't eat it, seriously. And eventually we cracked it and we won the World Bread Awards. We've since won 15 medals as well. So I guess that's technically we are the best gluten-free bread in the world. And we've gone from there. We've launched into retail last November and we're just going from strength to strength now. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a fantastic story. Can you tell me a little bit about the sort of the bread kits themselves?
Yes, of course. Currently, we are doing just bread kits and catering packs. So they contain everything you need to make the breads. That includes the baking trays, everything. If you've got a spoon, a bowl, an oven, and some water, you can make these breads. So you don't need to knead them because there's no gluten. You just add the water, you mix, leave it to rise for 20 minutes or so, and then bake it. Job done. It's the quickest, most beautiful bread in the world.
Obviously, it's not like one of these where you need to have the bread maker then and have all that. It's very much a case of just do it yourself.
Absolutely. The bread makers are just there because there's all this kneading and locking back and stuff like that. And you don't have to knead this. Kneading is for gluten. Yeah. And this is great. You just mix it like a little cake. It comes out like a cake mix almost. And you pour it into the baking trays that come with the kit. Just go off and do something great for 20 minutes or so. And then pop it in the oven.
Fantastic. I mean, in terms of the gluten-free aspect, obviously we're seeing a lot of sort of gluten-free products come onto the market. Do you think that is just a case of, you know, 5-10 years ago, people had these issues, but they didn't really know about them and there was just nothing really on the market to sort of help them with their diets?
Yes, I think so. Gluten-free, there's about 12 million people in this country and rising who choose not to take gluten. Some of those are because they're celiac or seriously intolerant like myself. And a lot of people that might be lifestyle, because it makes them feel a bit bloated. And that's 12 million, that's a fifth of our population, which is incredible. I think a lot of the people, there's an increase in IBS, stomach problems, gluten intolerance, apparent other intolerances. And this is much more recognised and reported these days, partly online, social media and all the rest of it, and people like you. But also, my view is that perhaps a lot of this might have come from genetic modification. So people have modified the wheats and things. And that's about 1,000 years worth of evolution gone on in the wheat within 10 years. And we humans haven't had 1,000 years of evolution to catch up with it. So perhaps that's my view, is the reason why more and more people are having problems, because we can't digest this stuff and we can't tolerate it.
And I suppose it's a case with gluten-free. Many of the products, there's not really a difference in taste, or like, as opposed to if you choose to do a vegan diet or something, obviously you're going to miss that meat. But with gluten, most of the products taste very much like the original, and you don't really need the original. Do you think in the future, sort of, there's just going to be more and more gluten-free products to the extent where sort of the non-gluten-free will become the niche?
I think there are more and more people that are focusing on gluten-free than non-gluten-free. The reason why we started doing what we're doing, and why I started in the kitchen experimenting and researching, was because I couldn't find a gluten-free bread, particularly bread, but batters and other things as well, that was nice, in my view. Obviously, I'm not going to diss everyone else, but a lot of gluten-free things, because you haven't got the structure, the gluten is like the glue that holds it all together. Because you haven't got that, people put other things in to replace the gluten, to try and stick all these strange flours together. And the result can be very dry and crumbly, quite sweet. And so our big challenge was to make it so that it had the texture and the flavour and the tearability and the feel in your mouth of real bread. And so, you know, not using E-numbers and preservatives, because they're bad for your tummy anyway. Yeah. You don't want those. And I think other people are following suit. It is increasing just generally now across the aisles, and you see the increase in the free from aisles these days, so yeah, that's huge.
And I mean, on a personal note, you've mentioned that obviously you've started the company as a result of your own health issues. What was you doing before? Has it been sort of a difficult transition to come into the food industry?
Well, it's quite strange. I've had a bit of a strange background, but I was a scientist, biochemist, nutritionist by background, and I've done a lot of had a lot of nutrition clients, and been banging on to just about everyone who knows that you are what you eat, and food that heals and doesn't harm and all this. And then I find myself in this situation where I'm eating stuff that's bad for me. And it was my husband. It took my husband to remind me, well, sort yourself out, really. You know, no sympathy here. So.
And obviously you're here at the IFE today. Sort of, what are you hoping, sort of short term, what's your short term vision for the company?
For the company, we've only recently launched into retail last November. There was an awful lot of product development going on. We had to get it right.
Yeah.
Had to get it right. And obviously winning the awards showed we were on the right track. We've signed up some great distributors who deal with all the health food and delis and farm shops in the country. And we're talking to some of the big manufacturers, but also food service, hospitality, you know, we're talking to hotels like that, because we're just setting up a bakery. So currently it's just kits and catering packs for other people to make themselves. But to have individual portions and individual frozen things, these stuff freezes well. People can take them out. If you take it out of the freezer, whether it's in the home or in a hotel or on an airline, and you defrost it, give it to the person in the bag, you know it's clean. They're not going to get contaminated, and they can feel safe with that and assured.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you've won awards, and obviously you're here today. So where can our listeners find out more information about Manavida?
From www.manavida, that's MANNAVIDA.co.uk, and that's Manavida, means bread of life. So that's
brilliant. Well, congratulations and good luck with the future.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. Thank you.
And that was Davina Steele of Manavida. Now, we've been talking to Helen Roberts about Wandsworth Foodies. We're going to still talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk to Mitch Sharma about his My Allergy. Can I just finish off a little bit, Helen, in terms of this, you know, you're saying it's very, very tough to run a business. Yeah, it is tough. And I have this theory that that's why not so many women are in business, because actually it is pretty sticky sometimes, and you have to be quite aggressive sometimes, and I think a lot of women don't like doing that, you know, that you know, they're not as confident sometimes as men in that respect. And I remember the first time having to ring somebody up because they owed us money. You know, that's not a nice phone call when you're saying, if you don't pay me, you know, I'm going to take you to court, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But it is tough sometimes, isn't it? And you've got to deal with it.
Absolutely. And I think it's having the capacity to take the knocks. You know, things are going to go really well. And when you have your high days, oh my God, there's such highs.
Yeah.
You know, those first deals that you get through when you make your first 100,000 and then you make your 500,000 and so on and so forth. But then there are days that you have really low days. Everything you've worked on for the last however long has fallen through. Mm. But it's being able to pick yourself up and being able to dust yourself down and just go for it and keep going for it. And so it's interesting on the female side, we're seeing many, many more women starting their own businesses today, which is fantastic. I mean, what's an average of 600,000 new startups every year, you know, to date? Massive trend for people to start businesses. And I think women now are really, you know, taking this by the scruff of the neck and actually starting businesses, because they can create the life that they want. They can work maybe from home. Maybe they have taken a career break and want to have a different kind of life than working in corporate world.
But aren't you talking about lifestyle businesses as opposed to what I would call proper heavy? I mean, you're talking about people doing a million turnover and all that. Can you really do that at home with a couple of kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about
I'm not being sexist here, but what I'm saying is, God, that's hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. Because it is more than full time.
No, absolutely. And the thing is, for the women that I work with, and many of them, yes, have kids, but they're working, you know, in the mornings, they're working, you know, in the evenings, they're working around their commitments at home. Mm. And then as they get bigger and as we kind of scale them, help them to create money, they then bring in more people to make that happen.
To alleviate that.
So it's nice to see that, because I think that it gives them the opportunity to, I mean, there's so many talented women on career breaks raising families right now. And that talent now, is they're starting businesses and some amazing, incredible businesses that, you know, we're seeing them starting to kind of grow. And and I think that it's a whole new world for women in business.
Mm. Mitt, you've got your my allergy business. Is it all been plain sailing for you, all nice and easy?
Oh,
I mean, you've
gosh.
Got a very experienced business background. Was it just plain sailing?
No. So my business background was in project management and business analysis, and that was in the oil and gas industry.
Yeah.
So now,
a bit different to food analogies, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So it's a completely new kind of like set of problems that I've had to overcome. And not only that, it's also the startup problems. So I was consulting, so kind of like ran a consulting business as well, doing all the contracting work while I was project managing. But this was just a complete step in the dark for me. But what really kept me going was mainly kind of like what brought about it in the first place. So what happened, and really this was kind of like the backstory to my allergy, was when my daughter was about 3 or 4 months old, we started the weaning process. And unfortunately, she had an anaphylactic reaction.
Oh, goodness.
What's crazy is how someone so small can vomit so violently and with so much pressure. And it's like, you see that in the movies when it's like projectile
vomit.
Wow. And it was just like that all over my shirt. But it was just like, and also her hands had swollen up, her feet had swollen up, and she was in a lot of pain. Rushed her to hospital. We luckily got her there in time. And then after they did subsequent tests, we realized that she was allergic to wheat, eggs, nuts, milk, dairy, avocado, sesame seeds, and peanuts.
Ooh.
That's almost all of them, I think. She's got a full house.
Prawns.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. It must be so challenging to like eat in your house with all of these things you have to work around.
That day pretty much changed it for us completely. So it was a case of completely looking at how we eat food, the way we eat food, what we put in our food. And the biggest scare is cross-contamination. That's the thing that worries us the most. So our shopping trips ended up being at least 1 to 2 hours long, because it was going up and down the aisles trying to find something that she can actually eat. Now, that was the first bit. Then getting her to actually like it. I mean, anyone who's got kids, is getting them to eat stuff is incredibly difficult. And then when you have these restrictions in place, it becomes even more so. So food was expensive. Finding food was expensive. And with her combination, it was becoming even more so. And once, because we had to give her soy milk, we went for 3 weeks without buying soy milk. And I always wondered why the shelves were empty in the shops. And then I realized when we started shopping is when we found something that she actually liked, we would buy the whole shelf. We would just take everything.
And so would everybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of like you found this golden nugget of food that she can actually eat. I can feed my kid. I mean, it's kind of like a relief thing that you can say. People take that for granted, just like, you know, you can just give your kids whatever it is. But for us, it's like, oh, we found something that she likes and she can get nutrition. But the other thing is she was always in the 5th to 9th percentile. So you get these kind of like percentiles for kids. They usually really be around the 50th. She never got above 10.
In what context? Sorry, just...
So whenever they weigh babies...
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah, they kind of like check them up regularly and you get this red book. And you get percentiles, and usually 50 means they're okay. Kind
I was
of thing.
Terrible. My kids were little because I should never bother turning up. And this guy, Mrs. Nelson, hello. And how old was your baby when? How much did your baby weigh when she was born? And going, well, I don't know.
No idea. Google it.
I'm really sorry. I don't know. When was the last time you? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know that either. It was a bit more lax then. Obviously.
Yes, I think now everything needs to be recorded. Everything
they
needs
certainly
to be kept.
Wasn't. You know, percentiles. I don't even
know. No, yeah. I mean, it's only because I've had the children. I didn't realize none of this stuff existed.
So is that they just say, look, your baby's porkier than it should be. It's in the top 5% of being porky sort of stuff.
They're just trying to kind of cause obesity is a bit of an issue. So it's just making sure that that's not starting at such an early age, I feel.
Good job. Didn't have that when I had my children. So we're
delight.
Such a good mother. So obviously that this awful experience has led you to I guess work out that lots of other people are in this situation.
That's it.
And struggling with it too.
Well, it was the question I was asking myself is it just me? I mean, am I the only person that's having to go through this, or is it a lot of people are having to experience something similar? And that's when I started sitting down, doing a bit of market research, talking to people, putting out surveys as well. And it wasn't a case of people were going through something that was similar. It was exactly the same thing. Finding products, going to grocery stores and seeing if they've got anything, shopping up and down the aisles, restaurants. We stopped going out. We could not go to any restaurants because none of them were catering for...
It's just too scary.
It's too scary. Yeah. And then even when it came to, as she was getting a little bit older, birthday parties, they were horrible. Mm. I literally had to stand behind her whenever she was eating and have her eating her own packed lunch or whatever it was, and then just, you know, trying to be this Chinese wall around her, saying, nope, can't have that, nope, can't have that. And then the worst thing is when all the other kids are eating cake or pizza or this, and they're saying, Daddy, can I eat that? And you're like, no, you can't, I'm afraid.
It must be really, really tough.
Really hard, yeah.
But we emotionally as well as...
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because you're just trying to do the most basic thing, feed your kid. That's all you want to do.
We used to have quite a lot of kids come around our house, I don't know why, and, you know, eat and all that sort of stuff. There weren't so many allergies then. I was obviously very sensitive to that. But we did have obviously lots of friends from different cultures. And we had some kids around who were Muslim. And I sort of forgot. I'm ashamed of myself. I forgot.
You can't even look at our guest as you're talking about this. You turned to me to the
ham,
side and be like...
Whoa. Loads of nice ham out and all that. Anyway, these kids were stuffing these things down. Sausages and all sorts of things.
Terrible.
Suddenly dawned on me, oh, I absolutely went white, you know, started sweating. I was thinking, oh my God. And these kids were going, oh, that's really nice. That, what is that? And I was going, oh, it's pink beef.
Wow.
So I thought I'd just lie. Anyway, when their parents came, I just couldn't lie. I had to tell them. And they were very, very good
not very
about
happy.
It. No, they were very good about it because I didn't do it on purpose, which is one of those things. But you have to be so careful, don't you? And obviously that's out of choice. The kids weren't going to be ill.
Yeah.
But that could so easily have happened to your daughter where just somebody just forgot or didn't realise.
And
then suddenly
happened,
you're up the hospital.
And that's happened a couple of times. In the first year, we were in A&E 9 or 10 times. She was more susceptible to colds. She kept getting tonsillitis for some reason. We couldn't quite figure that out. And there's this thing called an allergy march. So she wasn't diagnosed with asthma, but she was also having a lot of breathing problems.
Yeah.
So whenever she got a cold, we'd have to call the ambulance. She'd have to be on a nebulizer.
Oh, Jesus.
And that happened. And then also we'd have really bad experiences. So we didn't know she was allergic to Nurofen. And as a parent, you're just like, oh my God, that's like 50% of the drugs that I can give a kid.
Yeah.
So we gave her that and she had rashes everywhere. Took her to the hospital and one of the doctors says, I think you've got bed bugs. And I was like, are you kidding me? Seriously? And when you get responses like that, you're just thinking...
That's just laziness. I'm
sorry. Yeah, like lazy, pulling your hair out.
Diagnosis. So you've set up this business, and it's essentially what it does, it's myallergy.com.
Yes.
It's spelled exactly as you would imagine. and basically, it's just one platform, and it helps people who have got to live with these allergies, learn from your experience, I suppose, so they don't have to go through it.
Yeah.
Basically, you can give them lots of advice. But also, you've started having a shop section, really, where people can actually get hold of this stuff and not go in to Waitrose or whatever, and it's all gone.
We have, but actually, we're pivoting. So what we're doing now is we find that awareness is actually one of the pain points that a lot of the customers are going through. So what we thought we would do is build a mobile application. And what you can do is have a very nice, neat user interface that doesn't just focus on allergies or intolerances, but just focuses on dietary restrictions, but under the whole My Allergy banner. And what you can do is, as a parent or even as a person yourself, you create this passport, and on there it tells you everything you're allergic to, intolerant to, how severe these allergies are, what happens. So do you get rashes or do you vomit or whatever it is? If you have an EpiPen, which of the three EpiPens do you have, and then how to administer it? And then who to contact in case of an emergency.
So essentially what you're doing now is, I'm going to ask Helen if this is good business advice at the moment. Essentially what you're doing is you're going up, you're vertically integrating, actually. You're going up the chain and trying to help people in terms of avoiding all these issues.
No,
so you're trying to get people to recognise them,
yes,
so to speak.
So it's
as opposed to, right, well, you know you've got this allergy, well, I'm not going to help you with that, but actually you can buy this, you can buy that, you can buy the other. You're going one step before that.
So we're going the one step before that to spread awareness. So a good use case would be if you're holding a birthday party and you want to know what people's allergies
are. Mitt's children are arriving, right? Get onto myallergy.com.
Get on myallergy.com. Tell everybody, hey, guys, I'm going to be cooking food. Send me your My Allergy passport, and here's my link, so you'll get like the equivalent of a Twitter handle. Send it to this, and then you will get all of these passports. And on your phone or even on the website, you can have a dashboard of all of the people and all of the allergies. And then you can then start thinking about, right, how can I buy or what can I get and which foods are appropriate for this group of people. But we're not just doing it for consumers. So what we found is we're actually spreading it to businesses as well. So every office I've been to, especially with large corporates and even councils, they probably have a coffee shop and they'll have soya milk. And that's probably it. Mm. But you get lactose-free milk, you get coconut milk, you get almond milk. But how do you know whether or not it's worth even getting those if you don't know how many people within that organisation actually have any restrictions?
We have four types of milk in our office. We've only got 19 people.
Wow.
It's really annoying.
That's a pretty high ratio, isn't it?
Oh,
so we've got 3,000 and there's only like two. So with corporates, what we want to do is they can set up a kind of like a handle again. So whatever their business name is, let's just call it London Corporate. And if there's X number of people working in that office, the employees can send their passports to that business and say, right, I'm allergic to all of these things. And that will then allow the business to make informed decisions as to what catering facilities they can provide. So if they know that there's like 20 people that have
And that's more cost effective for them, isn't it?
Exactly. Because you're already paying more for these foods. But if you know that there are people there that are buying it, then it's worthwhile getting. But not only that, there's a big thing going on in a lot of businesses now is the well-being of their employees.
Yeah.
And one of the things employees got to do is eat. So that's definitely something that we can assist with. And that's where we think we can get a lot of organic growth. Because it's a case of, oh, okay, this is something I can use. This is actually something I can also let my friend know.
And what a headache as well. We've got all these different people and I don't even know what to supply anymore. It used to just be, I can just do cheese sandwiches. And
it's
now
very complex.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Anymore.
No, exactly.
Good business model, Helen. We're running out of time now.
Well, yeah, I like the sound of that. And I think that there's lots of ways that you could integrate that into kind of events companies as well.
Exactly.
For weddings and kind of
we can do
parties
catering,
and
parties, exactly. Travel, yeah. Hotels,
absolutely.
Restaurants.
Yeah,
absolutely. So we're looking to expand it and provide these services for a lot of other businesses as well.
And you were saying to me that it's also going to be multilingual. So if you happen to be traveling somewhere, you have an English allergy passport, but you happen to be in Spain, you can read it in the local language so everybody knows what's going on.
Yeah, and you can also print it off. So if you know you're going to Spain, you can take printouts of it, give it to the waiters at the hotel or at whatever restaurant you're going to, and then they can use that and advise you as to what you can or cannot eat.
I'm afraid, Monsieur, you can only have beer.
Oh, terrible. Only if it's gluten-free like
gluten-free beer, yeah.
Funny enough, Dave Mitten, you're actually going back to where you started in your professional career, if you think about it. Because obviously I know that you were at BP and a project support and, you know, a portfolio analyst and you're sort of performance and operations manager.
Yep.
You actually are going back, in a way, to analysing for other people, aren't you? And it just happens to be in this area that you've stumbled across. You're going back to the things that you're good at, really.
The other thing I've learned in the last couple of years is data is kind of like the new currency.
Absolutely, for a lot
of startups. Mm-hmm. It's not so much how much your turnover is, which makes it a little bit difficult when it comes to valuations and investments, is how many people are going to use this? What information are you going to capture about this? And then how can you utilize that information, obviously making sure you're sticking to all the privacy laws, in order to then subsequently generate revenue? So there was a really fantastic piece where they say the biggest taxi company in the world has no taxis.
That's Uber, and same Airbnb.
Exactly.
Biggest, you know, no property.
And
how do you value people without assets? Quite difficult.
Very. And they have all of these models. But for us, what we're finding is our currency definitely is going to be the data. So it's letting organizations, schools even, so we talked a little bit about corporates, but a nursery knowing that, or a school, that these are the children that have food allergies or intolerances, what suppliers can we then bring in order to make sure we can provide them with food? But not only that, because right now all the schools that we found were paper-based, whenever a parent updates the child's passport, the school automatically gets that notification to say, either they've gained an allergy or they've lost an allergy, and then adjust accordingly.
I'm so glad that my children are like 28 and 25, don't have to worry about things.
Well,
like
here's
that.
The other thing, because food allergies and intolerances don't discriminate against age, sex, or where you're from.
Thanks for that.
Sorry.
But I'm glad that we're now living in a world where the technology is there to be able to help people do this kind of stuff.
I think so, and thank goodness, really.
Absolutely.
So if anybody wants to know more about myallergy.com, they need to go on to myallergy.com, funny enough. And Mitt has got some great videos on there as well, a particularly good video on Vimeo, which explains the whole story in detail.
And just to add, we're also going to be starting our crowdfunding campaign very soon on Cedars. So if you actually want to be part of this company and part of the journey, we would encourage you to go to cedars.com/myallergy or search for myallergy. And again, there's a lot more information there. The video, we've
good
got
at marketing, aren't you, Mitten?
You have to.
You're good at marketing. Thank you for that. And thank you so much, Helen. I know that if anybody wants to go on to wandsworthfoodies.co.uk, they can get loads of help. But you are opening the same thing in other boroughs because it's so successful.
Absolutely.
So where else are you?
So on the 17th of May, so next week, we are launching our first masterclass event with Richmond Foodies. So that's going to be
more
focusing
upmarket,
on
isn't it, than
sales.
It's a bit upmarket over there.
Oh, it's got a mix of everybody. It's there for everybody. So it's going to be focusing on sales and business models and just, you know, accelerating growth from there. And hopefully soon to be in Chiswick.
Yeah. Interesting to see if the profile is very different from Wandsworth, isn't it? You know, what sort of businesses you're going to get and whether that's a different profile.
I think it'll be interesting. I mean, I run a local initiative in Richmond as well called Startup Richmond. And so we have a whole mix of everybody as well, from pre-start to startup to small and medium-sized businesses. But we've got some great names, great brands in Richmond as well. And we encourage the bigger businesses to get involved in the campaign because they take a mentorship role with some of our smaller businesses. And it's fantastic to see so many of them getting in touch to get involved. So anybody that wants to get involved, please get in touch with us at richmondfoodies.co.uk or wandsworthfoodies.co.uk.
Brilliant. And I would seriously advise, I mean, just listening to Mitt and Helen today, if you can go and get advice and it's free, you know, just go and get it. It could make the huge difference to your business.
Completely. And also the other thing that we found is accelerators also can be quite useful as well. You can get a lot of exposure and help
absolutely.
There.
So the end of another program.
It's been another fantastic afternoon chatting to these
Don't
wonderful
forget,
people.
foodtalk.co.uk. You can hear us again. You can find out loads of stuff.
And we'll be back next week.
Thank you very much for joining us, Guy, as usual.
My pleasure.
And yes, we will see you next week. Thank you.
Cheers.